From the Arizona Daily Star and Tucson.com, this is the Wildcast.
We're back. I'm Zach Rosenblatt, reporter at the Arizona Daily Star, bringing you the latest edition of the Wildcast, Episode 7, here in my condo with my dog, Maggie. Maggie, important question here. Should Arizona be worried about Ed Oliver? She just licked the mic, so I think that means they should be worried. We have a little change of pace this week. Maggie and I aren't alone. Spooky. Actually, I'm here with a good friend of mine who I'll introduce in a minute, but I'm just going to make him wait here awkwardly while I touch on a few things. After we talk to our special guest, I'll call out to our good friend Michael Lev to preview the Houston game. I'll open up the Twitter mailbag, which was filled with some high-quality questions this week. There was even one about Game of Thrones, so I'll get to nerd out for a little bit. And then we'll close out the podcast with a great chat that Michael had earlier in the week with Arizona freshman quarterback Rhett Rodriguez, a.k.a. Rhett Rod, who is obviously Rich Rod's son. And yeah, don't forget to subscribe to the podcast on your Apple Podcast app or Google Play. Download our Wildcaster app to read all of our stories. It's free. And every week, don't forget to send me your Twitter mailbag questions, and they'll come on the podcast every Friday to hashtag AskBlatt or at ZachBlatt. And this time next week, we'll actually have a very special episode. It won't be in the condo. Maggie won't be here, unfortunately. But I'll be in the car with the legend Greg Hansen and Michael Lev, and we'll be road tripping to El Paso, and you'll get some of our conversations there. And and beyond that, you know, I'm excited to bring on our newly hired producer, Justin Spears. He's going to be in the mix starting next week. You'll be hearing from him soon and often. And yeah, I mean, that's all the things I had to touch on. So I guess we'll finally get over to my first guest is Mario Ziccarelli, an Arizona alum, the former Zona Zoo executive director, who's here to chat with us a bit about Arizona's issues with the fan base recently. Mario, how does it be back in Tucson?
Feels great to be back in Tucson. I feel like I'm probably just here so your listeners think you actually have friends and aren't alone in your condo most of the time. Is that about right?
They know I'm alone in my condo at this point. There's only been one episode and they've learned that about me already.
It's good that we show a little variation, that you do maybe have some friends out there besides Maggie, although Maggie's a great dog.
She's my best friend, let's be honest. but yeah, I mean, you were the Zona Zoo executive director in what year? What school year was it?
2013-14, I was the executive director, and 12-13, I was the associate executive director.
So what exactly does that job entail, I guess, for people who don't really know, I guess? You just kind of run the show.
Yeah, so you're the main representative for the student body, the athletic department. You organize student events within the athletic department. You try and get them organized for Chance. When I was in charge, we, I think, revamped basketball more so than football and kind of organized Chance for basketball season. And we tried to encourage student attendance to football games, which is still a problem today.
Yeah, obviously the basketball crowds aren't an issue. I saw Zona Zoo fans coming for all their crappy non-conference home games, which they're really bad, even compared to football. But yeah, I mean, as someone who's been away from the team for a couple of years, especially as an alum and someone who's so involved with the Zona Zoo, how disappointing is it when you turn on the game and it's the second half and the Zona Zoo's half filled, sometimes less? I mean, I know they were bad last year, but I mean, that's not a good look, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's never a good look. It's hard to look around the stadium, not just students, but just fans in general, and it's half empty. It's tough to see a football stadium look that way. But I've, as someone who's been on the other end trying to recruit students there, it's not an easy sell at times. I mean, like you said, sometimes their opponents are bad. Holiday weekend last weekend, late kickoff time, 8:30 p.m. And on top of that, as much as I love Arizona football, they haven't been good lately. Yeah. And it's hard to recruit people to go to a game when the team's bad.
Yeah, I mean, even, you know, they were decent year to year. 2014, they were really good, obviously. But what were, like, and I know you dealt a lot with, like, Greg Byrne at the time. And, like, what were the conversations like, I guess? And, like, how did he, like, bring it up to you at all? Like, any ideas? Like, what were those conversations like to get people to stay? And I know you did the whole stay until the end of the game. I don't know if that was your year or not with the shirts. But
so that year actually was that was my year. Greg Byrne came to me and decided that he wanted to put Zona Zoo stays all game on the back of the shirt. Said the idea came to him while he was on either the treadmill or the elliptical. I can't remember now, but it was while he was working out. And the idea came to him. So, I mean, they paid for the shirt, so I was like, okay, go for it. And then I pitched the idea to reward students at the end of the game.
That's when you're doing, like, those cash prizes, right?
Right. Yeah. So we did for the first three non-conference games, which were the, like, low-draw, low-yield games, we did $500 cash prizes. We gave away five of them per game. And it really worked for the first game. I remember the Daily Wildcat at the time put out a story that it's like the Zona Zoo strikes back or something like that, and it was kind of a feather in our cap that we actually got students – to stay. And I think the following year was the year they went to the Fiesta Bowl, and they had pretty good success retaining students that year as well. But
I do remember that Cal game, which was understandable because they were getting killed and the fans left. And that there was also the Oregon game, actually, where they came back
right
when they were it was a bad weather day. But I mean, it's just funny how that works.
Yeah. And that was my last year, or that was my last game of my senior year. And I remember running that game. It was supposed to rain, and I get a call from some people in the athletic department, and they call me up. They're like, "Hey, do you know it's supposed to rain tomorrow?" And it's like, "Yeah, it's raining right now. I'm aware it's supposed to rain." And they were worried. They were trying to come up with like gimmicks or ideas, themes to get people to come. And we were setting up the tailgate. I think it was a gloomy mood for most of the Zona Zoo head ups. And Greg Hansen actually wrote an article that day ripping the Zona Zoo for not showing up enough.
He's been harsh at times on the zoo.
Yeah. And I mean, I met Greg. I love the guy. Good guy. But it was tough. It was an all around hard day. And then they pulled off that miracle win. And at halftime,
was that the Oregon one where Scooby like tossed it to Shaq Richardson, that interception?
Yeah, that's how the game started, and everyone showed up after halftime. The zoo was full, and my dad was watching the game on TV, and he told me that it filled up progressively over the course of the game. Yeah. So it was actually the reverse effect.
I mean, that was pretty unique. So that probably won't ever happen again, that kind of situation. But I mean, obviously, there's issues on both sides, as our president would say, but not to get political, in terms of like the Arizona, they can't do anything about the kickoffs like that. They don't have any control over that. I guess they can control like what time the students are allowed in and stuff like that. And on the student side, like it's hard to blame them when the team's not doing well, but like, what do you think can be done to help it, I guess, or get students in the stands? I know one thing people talk about, and I think they're going to do this, is reducing the Zona Zoo a little bit.
And I think that that's fair. The only problem with reducing the Zona Zoo, and I've always said that they won't do it until this happens, is you need to sell out the rest of the stadium. If you're going to reduce the zoo, because there's always a potential you might get those 10,000.
It just looks worse if completely empty.
Exactly. So, yeah, you need to make sure you can sell it out. On top of that, I know we've talked about it, it's going to be a hard uphill battle, but serving alcohol to students who are 21 – a lot of kids, you know, like it or not, drink before they go to games. They tailgate. Adults do it too.
That's part of the problem. They have to get there an hour before, and then they sober up at halftime, so they leave. Right.
And I mean, you know, we're both adults. We both drank before. You're sitting in the heat after.
I've never drank before, actually.
Wow, you're such a good guy. Very impressive, ladies. He's single. I think it's a tough thing to expect people to stay. If there's alcohol available, it kind of keeps the environment at a certain level. And then kind of question for you, how many bad teams do you know that can sell out games consistently in any sport, not just college, pro as well? I can think of one team.
I mean, the only reason that ever happens in college is if it's like somewhere like Eugene or something like that where there's absolutely nothing else to do. Mm-hmm. No offense to Eugene, it's a cool place, but like they're never not going to Ducks games. Like there's schools like that, but yeah, unless you have the pedigree of an Oregon in recent years or like a, you know, an Alabama, they'd never have a bad year. But if they did, their fans would still go. But yeah, I mean, it's tough to sell it.
I mean, the only team I can think of that sells out their games no matter what, the Chicago Cubs sold out their games for years. And that's a pro team. Pro teams have the same problem. So if a team is consistently good, I've always thought that Arizona can be a football town. It's just they're in the Pac-12. It's hard to recruit. It's not an easy conference to compete in. But the potential's there, and if they can string together 2-3 really good years, I think it could build into something.
Sure.
All right. Well, I think that's as good a place as any to stop. Thanks for joining us, Omari. I appreciate you stopping by the condo. And, we're going to call out to Michael in a little bit and preview the Houston game. Our good friend Michael on the other line, unlike Nick Wilson, he is actually good to go this week. Michael, how you doing?
I'm doing better than Nick Wilson, I guess.
They need to call it the Nick Wilson injury report going forward.
Oh man, I feel bad for him.
I know,
honestly.
Me too. Yeah.
He worked so hard in the off season to improve his flexibility, to make sure he was loose and fit. He was doing prehab. He was going to get treatment when he didn't need it. We don't know exactly what happened to him. I assume that this happened in practice because I didn't see anything at all in the game that would indicate that he had some sort of an ankle injury. Hopefully it's something minor and he'll be back soon, but, you know, a little twist heading into this Houston game.
Yeah, we joke about how often he gets hurt, but the only reason why it's such kind of a joke is because he's like, when he plays, he flashes so much talent every time he touches the ball. And so it's always kind of sad just to see how his career's kind of gone this way.
I mean, I hate to say this, but, you know, some guys' bodies are just not cut out for long-term football careers. You know, know, it's the vast majority of the population, honestly. The good news is, though, of all the positions on the team, I would say that running back, at least for now, maybe the best depth of anywhere. You know,
I mean we've been saying that all preseason, so I hope it's true at this point.
Yeah, I mean, of course, you know, if J.J. Taylor gets hurt in the Houston game, then you look at things a little bit differently. But they have J.J. They have Zach Green, who has really made himself into a decent college player. I mean, his last two performances have been excellent. And then, you know, you have Nathan Tilford, who looked awesome in his brief appearance. You have Brandon Leone, who recently earned a scholarship, and I think he deserved it because
he's shown some flashes. Yeah.
Go ahead.
Nice. I was just saying he's shown some flashes from what we've seen of him. He's got good speed and good agility, it seems like.
He does. He does. I think that's legit. And then, like, in a real super emergency situation, they could call on Gary Brightwell, too, and put him back there. And he's built for the role better than Samaji Grant or Tyrell Johnson, the kind of emergency call-ups they had last year.
Yeah.
So I think they'll be okay without Nick Wilson. Obviously better with him.
Yeah.
But I think they can do fine if he had to miss a game or two.
Yeah. I mean, just going off that, if Nick doesn't play, how do you think they split it up? Do you think it goes like, you know, JJ gets the majority of the carries and then they throw in Tilford and Leone and Zach Green just to rest him up? Like, is that how you think it would go?
I don't think it's inconceivable that they would have a similar rotation to what they had last week with
switching series, yeah.
Alternating with JJ, but my guess is that it would be maybe more like 2/3 JJ. Yeah,
yeah. And then the rest just divvied up, yeah.
Tilford sprinkled in, something like that.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah, I mean, we've half joked, half seriously said how this might be their most important game of the season, even though it's only week two. So it's finally here. I mean, we've talked about this game all offseason. But
we have.
Yeah.
And I think that's a completely valid argument. I'm actually writing about that for Saturday's paper, story that'll be online Friday night on Tucson.com. It's not anything that the players would ever think about or the coaches or anything that they would ever talk about, but we as media people, you know, we look at the schedule and we kind of try to figure out, like, which are the winnable games and which are the definite losses and which are the ones that could go either way. And this Houston game is one of those ones that could go either way. And it's pivotal to their hopes of making the postseason. I mean, there's just a huge difference between going 3-0 in the preseason and going 2-1.
Mm-hmm.
There's 3-0,
especially in this conference.
Yeah, they're 3-0. That's as many wins as they had all of last season.
Yeah,
I mean, think of how good
man. They'd
be feeling going into Pac-12 play if that's the case.
Well, that's a great point. I didn't even think of it like that. Yeah. I mean
confidence is a big part of this game, and you could tell last year as they were in the throes of that losing streak that they had little to no confidence.
Yeah.
No matter what they'd say from week to week, you could tell, like, in the game at a certain point when things would kind of go the wrong way that, you know, their confidence level would drop.
Yeah.
So that's another reason this game is so important.
Yeah, I mean, I wrote in today's newspaper about how I think Brandon Dawkins is kind of going to dictate what this team becomes if Rather Richrod keeps his job, and I think that starts this week. I mean, I feel like, you know, if he doesn't, I mean, part of the story was, you know, how infrequently he's completed a good percentage of his passes, and how if he can get over 55% even, then they'll be in good shape. I mean, do you think it's as simple as Dawkins just completing more passes this week? Will that be the difference?
I talked to Yogi Ross, our mutual friend from Pac-12 Network.
Love Yogi. How great is ball?
For this story, and Yogi is one of the foremost Pac-12 football experts out there. He really does a good job. He's super thorough. He watches the film of every game, sometimes more than once each week. So we were talking about Dawkins a little bit, and he said, you know, what it comes down to is, you know, maybe 3 3rd-and-7 plays during the course of a game that he needs to complete.
Yeah.
You know, just a handful of those third and longish situations, You know, it doesn't have to, like, set the world on fire. It just needs to keep the chains moving, convert a few third downs. And if he can do that, it might be the difference between them winning against Houston or winning against Utah. That in and of itself, those few simple third and seven completions could be the difference between them winning four games and winning six games. So I agree with you. I think his play is absolutely pivotal. Brandon Dawkins needs to step up and improve as a passer. You know, Yogi complimented his being a gamer, which I had never really thought about, but it's true. He is extremely competitive. He's tough. He's a great runner. He's determined, but he does need to improve in the pass game. It is really hard to win in the Pac-12 if you can't complete passes at least a 55% rate. I mean, I know you threw that number out there, but to me, that's a pretty low standard.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah, yeah.
At 60 or above.
I mean, even I had this in the story, but his passing percentage last year, I think it was 53.8, and it was the lowest at Arizona since 2004. I mean, even if you look back 2011 when they went 4-8 and Stoops got fired, Nick Foles passed for a team record like 69% completion. Like, it's just such a far, precipitous fall from like where they need him to be.
I mean, we do need to keep in mind that these last two games are really kind of fluky.
Yeah, yeah. You're not going to throw 20 passes in two games. Yeah.
They didn't need to pass very much. They were so dominant in the run game. They had big leads in the second half. And even this last game, I mean, Brandon only played 2.5 quarters.
Yep.
You know, so it is, as they say, a small sample size. But he also has a lot to prove based on, you know, the way his play declined in the passing game over the course of last season and that small sample size that we witnessed last Saturday.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I guess then on the flip side, I think another key to the game, I mean, beyond Ed Oliver, which I think we've talked about enough this week, you can read all of our stories about him online. But I think on the flip side Houston hasn't announced the quarterback as of us recording this, but I'm assuming it's going to be Kyle Allen. I feel like that's a fair assumption. How confident are you even in Arizona's ability to defend the pass against a guy like that after what they showed last week against NAU?
Whether it's Kyle Allen or I think the other guy's name is Kyle Postma.
Oh, two Kyles.
Two Kyles. whoever the quarterback is, and Houston's going to have better receivers as a group than NAU had.
Bigger bodies on the line,
probably than NAU's. The line will be better.
Yeah.
My confidence level is medium at best regarding this U of A secondary. I mean, we saw a lot of the same things from a different cast of characters with a different cornerbacks coach as we saw last season, and that is that they struggled to defend the ball down the field. Very fundamental type stuff that seems really basic, getting your head around, locating the ball, knocking it away. It's kind of mystifying to me how that's still a struggle for them. Coach Yates, Marcel Yates, the defensive coordinator, who now coaches the cornerbacks, we talked to him this week about that topic, and he laid it out pretty simply. Like, when they look for the ball, we look for the ball, you know?
Yeah.
That's how it's supposed to work. I don't know why it didn't. He thought that maybe there was an element of panic. You know, the guys were just a little nervous.
Yeah, it was Lorenzo Burns' first game of his career. It was Sammy Morrison's first game in 2 years. Yeah.
Yeah, I think those are legitimate causes for something like that to happen. You hope that there will be a big improvement from week one to week two. But, I mean, again, it's kind of like with Brandon Dawkins. Like, I think we need to see it to believe it.
Yep. I feel like that's almost the theme of Arizona's. I mean, it's super early, obviously, but I feel like that's the theme of Arizona's season. Like, we'll believe it when we see it because they've talked a lot about certain stuff, but, like, it's hard to judge based on the NAU game, and, like, we don't know what Houston's going to bring. So I just think it's very interesting how little we know even after a game.
It makes this week two game really intriguing.
Yeah.
You know,
especially because nobody knows what to expect from Houston, like, at all.
No. No, I don't think so. The one thing that Yogi said to me that I thought was interesting about Houston was, he's like, they know how to win. You know, a lot of the players on this team are used to winning from their success the last 2 years, and he compared them to Western Michigan in that regard, and he said that that's something that people underestimate, and it's a reason that Western Michigan was able to hang in against USC for so long.
Yeah.
You know?
That's a great point.
That confidence factor that we talked about earlier. A lot of these Houston guys have experienced a lot of success over the last 2 years, so even though there's turnover in personnel and in the coaching staff, that's still kind of embedded in the program.
Yeah, that makes sense. All right, I guess now let's go to the fun part. Let's do some predictions. I'm gonna throw a few at you, and you let me know what you think.
Okay.
All right, we'll do the score last. Do you think Arizona gets more or less than 200 rushing yards?
I'm gonna say less.
Less.
I'm a believer in Ed Oliver at the defensive front. If they ended up with 150 to 175, I think that would be pretty good and might be enough for them to win the game.
Yeah, that's fair. I mean, especially against...
Are you going over or under 200?
No, I guess it kind of depends on if Nick Wilson plays, to be honest, but I'll go under just because, I mean, they only gave up 100 per game last year, so if Arizona gets 200, they're probably winning this game pretty easily. But, all right, now this one we've talked about a lot already, but I guess, do you think Brandon Dawkins completes more or less than 55% of his passes?
Yes.
You think he does?
I think he can. Again, I don't think that's a very high threshold.
Yeah, I know, but...
55%, I mean...
But how often in his career has he done that is the only thing.
Now, so yeah. Yes, I think he can exceed 55%.
I'm going to say he doesn't. All right.
That would not be a good sign.
No, it would not. And then, again, going off another point we just talked about, Kyle Allen or the other Kyle, whoever plays a quarterback, do you think they throw for more or less than 3 touchdowns?
I'm gonna go less.
Or I guess I should say over under 2, and I guess over under. Probably, I'll change that to over under 2.5.
Why I'm leaning in that direction.
What was that?
When we get to the score portion of the predictions here, you'll see why. I would lean toward the under on 3 touchdown passes.
All right, yeah, I would say he throws 2 touchdowns, but that might not necessarily indicate which way the game's going to go. But, yeah, and then I guess one more, I guess, do you think Ed Oliver gets more than 1 sack in this game?
I say yes.
Yes?
We'll get more than 1 sack. I think we're going to see Ed Oliver unleashed. We talked about it at the beginning of the week. It's kind of the biggest... single kind of X and O elements to this game is like how big of an influence this guy is going to have.
Yeah.
Can Arizona minimize that? You know, man, Yogi threw out a fascinating possibility, and he said, you know, if and when Arizona runs zone replays, that maybe they don't block Ed Oliver.
Oh God.
There's always I know, right? Crazy, right? But there's always someone who's unblocked,
yeah,
in a zone read scheme, and maybe Ed Oliver, if you can't block him anyway.
I think right now you're giving Terrace Jones Grigsby nightmares right now. After he got murdered by Leonard Williams a few years ago, and maybe we see a repeat of that. That wouldn't be good. But yeah, all right, and then let's go to the final score and who you think's gonna win. You go first.
Yeah, this was really hard. I went back and forth a bunch of times.
It's a tough one.
Who's actually going to win this game? It's one of the toughest games to call since I joined the beat. It reminds me a lot of the BYU game in that regard. So I'm going with kind of a similarly low score, and I'm going to say Arizona 24, Houston 20. I don't see this game being a shootout type of game. I think it's going to be a little bit on the lower end of things as far as the score goes. And I'm just kind of banking on the Wildcats improving a lot from week 1 to week 2, especially with so many young guys in the lineup. What do you got, Zach?
Yeah, I mean, a similar score, just on the flip side. I think Houston's going to win. They're going to score 24, and I have Arizona at 17 points.
Okay, so you sort of see the game evolving in a similar manner then, huh?
Yeah, I don't see it being a blowout in either direction, though. I mean, you could convince me that if Houston's as good as they were last year, that they could blow this team, Arizona, out. But, yeah, I don't think Arizona's as bad as they were last year either. So, I don't know. It's just this game, like you said, it could go in so many different directions. For all we know, Houston just doesn't come out ready, and Arizona scores some points early, and they end up beating them by a lot. Like I could see it so many different ways, but I just see Houston winning this game, which won't be good for Arizona, obviously.
Yeah, the one thing that worries me about Arizona is that whole notion of Houston shutting down the run game.
Yeah.
And then what?
Yeah, exactly. You know, like that's the scary part.
Run the ball with running backs or with quarterbacks. What happens?
I guess going off that. So if Arizona gets less than 150 rushing yards this game, do you think they lose?
Ooh, now you went from 200 to 150. If they're under 150, I think it's going to be a struggle.
Yeah.
Yeah. So let's put 150 out there as kind of the threshold that they need to reach at a minimum. For the offense to be effective enough.
It's funny saying that's the threshold for a team that just rests for 1,000 yards in two games.
Well, you know what? I mean, different opponent.
Yeah, no, for sure. But it's just kind of funny. Yeah.
I know. ASU obviously is a Power Five team, but they didn't show up. I
don't know if their run defense is Power Five.
No, I don't even know if it was Group of Five that night. I mean, it was pretty bad, but. Yeah. Yeah, let's say 150 or more, and I think they got a good chance. Less than that,
yeah,
they could be in trouble.
Yeah, between that and Brandon Dawkins' completion percentage threshold, I think we'll be able to tell what happens. But
all right, now I'm just going to cut over to the Twitter mailbag. Thanks for calling in, Michael. We got a lot of questions this week. I'm going to try and hit all of them if I can. Sorry if I missed any. But as always, send your questions to hashtag AskBlatt or directly to me on Twitter, at ZachBlatt. All right, the first question comes from at NightKing32. He said, as a whole, can you compare Rich Rod's recruiting to Mike Stoops's, and what have both coaches done well and what have been their shortcomings? You know, I think we've covered Rich Rod's shortcomings pretty extensively. He didn't recruit Texas until now. He hasn't recruited the islands and the Polynesian community. And these are all things that Mike Stoops and Dick Tomey before him did really well. I think in 8 years, Mike Stoops signed 48 players from Texas. And Rich Rod, in his 6 years here, has signed four, and two of them were Mike Stoops recruits. And I think we're learning that was a big mistake. And if Arizona doesn't bounce back this year, then that's kind of be his undoing. Stoops, you know, he recruited a lot of JC guys, and he recruited a lot of, you know, higher-ranked guys, and he was able to reel a lot of them in, but a lot of them had attitude issues or didn't have a position or it just didn't pan out. So I think maybe the talent evaluation wasn't quite as good with Stoops, but overall recruiting-wise, he did a much better job than Rich Rodriguez, in my opinion. At R. Bowron, 1856, asked, can Ed Oliver alone hold Arizona under 31, and can Arizona hold Houston under 42? I mean, Ed Oliver alone, he's pretty good, but he's not the whole defense. They have a good defense overall in general. If Arizona can score 31 points on them, then they're going to win this game. And then on the flip side, even as bad as Arizona's defense is, if they don't hold Houston under 42 points, then they're going to be a lot of trouble this season. At Dave Gerhardt, he asked, which Pac-12 teams besides ASU rank poorly in run defense? We can't throw, but we were probably the best rushing team in the conference. ASU is for sure the worst rush defense team in the conference. I would say Oregon is probably right there. Arizona. Cal doesn't really have a great rush defense either. But the rest of the conference is actually pretty good at stopping the run. That's going to be an issue for an Arizona. If they don't shore up their tackling, they're going to have some trouble. At TVR, TomTom asked, any chance UA basketball will come out with retro uniforms, such as the 88 team, similar to what UConn has done? I don't even think that's not even up to Arizona. That's up to Nike. I don't see that happening, but it would be pretty cool if they were able to bring some retro stuff back in the mix. But I'm not really personally a fan of Arizona's uniforms right now. But I don't see that happening. At Dr. DeRochers asked, between Frasier Crane, Ted Mosby, and Jerry Seinfeld, who do you think has the most girlfriends over the course of their show? I actually did some research on this to see what the internet had to say. This is all unofficial numbers. Before I read, my guess was going to be Frasier 1, Seinfeld 2, Ted Mosby 3. I was almost right. Seinfeld was number 1. It looked like he had in the 70s of girlfriends over the course of the show. It looked like Frasier had in the 50s, and Ted Mosby was around 38. So yeah, that's a hard hitting question. I like that. At Frat Night Gaming asked, what happened to Noah Jefferson and can the Cats land him for next year? Was it a decommit or did staff back off? I would say it's highly unlikely Noah Jefferson ends up at Arizona now. For those who don't know, he was a USC transfer who committed to play here. And then as it turned out, you know, from what we heard, some of his background check turned up with some issues, off the field issues, and I think Arizona's decided that it wasn't the right fit to bring him in. I think he went to Arizona Western. He's going to be there for the next year. I would be pretty surprised if he wound up here next year, although it could be a new coaching staff, so who knows. At DTAS 22, he said he's throwing me a homer question. I respect that. He said, more likely to make the playoffs, the Eagles or the Sixers? Odds may be uncredited. Yeah, so this is a tough one. I'm going to have to go with the Sixers, though. I think the Eagles have a harder path. They have a pretty tough schedule. They're in a tough division. I love Carson Wentz. He's my hero, but not quite as much as Joel Embiid, who is the best basketball player in the history of the sport. So I would say the Sixers are more likely, mainly because the Eastern Conference is such garbage, and I'll put my money on the Sixers competing for championships in a few years. Maybe that's a homer comment, but that's what I think. At Buddy4Wine asked, In-N-Out or Five Guys? In-N-Out, and I'm not even going to discuss this because that's just ridiculous for anyone who thinks otherwise. Kyle's Dad, 2010, asked, what week is Khalil Tate named the starter? I think I'd be surprised if he was named it over Brandon Dawkins at any point, but the way Dawkins plays, it wouldn't surprise me if he got hurt, and then Khalil Tate would obviously be the next man up, and if he impresses, then he could for sure keep the job, and that might even be the best thing for Arizona's future because he's only a sophomore and got a lot of potential, so that'll be something to watch because I would be highly surprised if he doesn't start at least one game this year. And Kyle's Dad 2010 also asked me a Game of Thrones question. He asked, is Bran really the Night King? This is an online thing, online theory that's been going around, and I just think it's absolutely ridiculous. I don't think there's any scenario where he's the Night King. They showed a flashback in the earlier seasons, and it showed a guy from a long time ago that clearly wasn't Bran. I could go into a lot of the theories that I have about the Night King and Bran and the Starks and all that, but I won't geek out too much for this podcast. And that's the last question for this week. Again, be sure to send us some more in, hashtag AskBlad or at ZachBlad on Twitter. And now I'm going to go over to Michael Lev in his interview he had earlier this week with Rhett Rodriguez.
Oh, okay. So Rich said that you were kind of ready to go. You had your helmet on. Like, as soon as Khalil came off, you were, like, going in. How would you describe that whole?
My dad told me before the game we had a conversation. He said that I don't know what the plan is, if you're going to play today or not. I don't know if we're going to redshirt you or not. It's kind of just see how it goes. And then once Khalil got in there, I kind of figured that I'd be the next guy in. So once he was in, I knew, okay, I had my helmet on ready to go. And once I saw him tap his head, I was like, all right, this might be me. And so then he said, Rhett. So ran out there, and that's how it went.
Weren't you and Donovan warming up a little bit before that, if I recall seeing on TV?
Yeah, BJ, because Khalil actually, before he tapped out, he was his arm or something was already kind of bothering him, so we already said, hey, like, be ready just in case. And so BJ over the headphone said, hey, Rhett and Donovan, warm up, get ready. But even I was already pretty much warm because I was helping warm up Khalil, which then warmed up me. Me and Donovan, we were both ready, and we were just ready to go.
Sure. So in the conversation with your dad about redshirting or not redshirting, what were your feelings on the subject?
I want to play as soon as I can. But I said, obviously, whatever you think to do, I trust your judgment. No one, I think, goes in wanting to redshirt. Everyone wants to play. But I said, hey, if I'm going to redshirt, I'm going to redshirt. If I'm going to play, I'm going to play. So I just didn't want him to think that I wasn't ready because I thought I was ready to go out there.
So what were your emotions when you ran onto the field as an Arizona Wildcat in a real game for the first time?
It was kind of a surreal moment because I thought about that a lot, and honestly, going into the game, I was like, I probably won't play, but I mean, I wasn't sure either way, and then once I was in there, I was like, this is really it. I didn't really have too much time to think about it, but I had kind of more time after the first handoff, and I was just there on the sideline, like, wow, I actually just got in the game.
Because you, like, went in basically for one play, scored a touchdown, and then right came out.
Yeah, I just went in one play, and they call it the easiest play in the playbook, where I don't have a read, I don't have a throw or anything, just catch the ball, handed the ball off, and scored a touchdown, so I was one for one.
Sure, sure. How, you came in here knowing a good chunk of the playbook already, obviously, because you're familiar with it, but where are you at as far as your knowledge of you would say, like, 100% or 90%, or how much of it do you...
I would say 100%. I think all the quarterbacks have a pretty much almost near 100% thing, because if someone doesn't know it, we pretty much get rid of it. And so Coach Smith and Coach McGee and my dad, we all kind of go through, hey, like, what are you guys confused about? What questions do you guys have? And if we bring something up and we're kind of all confused about it, then they'll just get rid of it. So we all pretty much know the whole playbook.
Sure. How do you think training camp went for you?
Training camp went well. It was every day it kind of – not that the game was, like, overly fast and I couldn't think of it, but the decisions, I think, became more natural and more instinctive whether than, okay, do this, do that, do this, and, like, one, two, three, it's kind of just all one. So I think my decision-making got quicker, and it's getting more down to the instincts, and that's what you want.
Obviously, it's not really fair to compare your physique to that of Donovan Tate because he's so much older than you, but when you see, like, how physically developed he is or how physically developed, like, Brandon is, do you see, look at that and be like, you know, that's my goal. I need to get bigger and stronger over the course of my career here to play at this level?
Oh, yeah, I know I'm the weakest quarterback, and I got the weakest arm and probably the slowest, but and probably the slowest 40, but I always tell everyone I'm a lot faster when someone's chasing me. So people, I think, probably underestimate my running and stuff because running, in terms of, it's not really about pure speed. It's about just being a willing runner and knowing when to attack and when to throw. And so I don't really have any restrictions, I think, and because I don't think you have to put me in there and think, oh, we can only pass and we just have to call pass plays. I think we can run the whole offense with me in there, but obviously I'm not the same as Khalil and Brandon and Donovan. They probably have a little different aspect, but I think I'm a pretty good runner on my own.
So in scouting Houston, are you looking at Houston from last year? Are you looking at Miami from like 2015 because that's where their defensive coordinator came from? Or
yeah, we've mainly been looking at the Houston defense right now because they have, I think, 9 starters coming back. So we're looking at the personnel, and kind of the further we go along in the week, the coaches will get down to more of the specifics, like, okay, this is how we think they're going to play him. So right now we're kind of just scouting out the personnel.
Sir, have you studied Ed Oliver?
Yeah, he's certainly an explosive guy. And, I mean, you'll see if he'll be the complete other side of the field and they throw a screen away from him, he'll still run and get at least a hand on the guy. And so he's definitely a really strong, fast guy, and he's got a high motor, so we got to be aware of where he is at all times.
Sure. Can someone like that, if he's getting regular penetration into the backfield, that can kind of blow up your offense, right?
Well, yeah.
Option type plays.
Yeah, almost all offenses, if you have a nose tackle that's just coming in, getting in your face, it's really hard for a quarterback. So I think we're going to have some different strategies to make sure that he can't single-handedly change the game, because you got to play all 11. You can't let one guy change what you do.
Sure. And one last thing for you. Obviously, Rich was laser-focused on the game as it was happening. He said he didn't really have a huge emotional reaction to your coming in the game, but your mom is down on the sideline, obviously your sister. What was the reaction among the family and stuff during or in the immediate aftermath of, you know, you're getting in the game?
Yeah, even Dad, whenever I came in, he gave me a little fist pump, and he had not a huge smile, but he had a little smirk on his face, so that was good. But my mom, she was on the sidelines and had her camera, and so she was obviously really proud and really happy. And I'm like, she's trying to take pictures in the middle of the game. I'm like, Mom, I'm still in the middle of the game. I don't know. And so then she took a picture. It'll probably be a classic, me and Brandon on the sidelines right in the middle of the game. So that'll probably be a good picture for a while. But
she's trying to get your attention? Like, hey, Rhett, smile. Or
yeah, because she was, like, right behind the quarterback. Yeah. She was like, hey, Rhett, hey. And then she's like, well, we got to get a picture. I'm like, Mom, I'm in the game. And she said, oh, we'll just take a second. And then she took a picture, and we got one of our friends to take a picture. And then after the game, I actually had both my grandmas and my aunt and some people in town. So we all got a big picture, and Raquel was down there. So it was a cool experience.
All right, that'll do it for this week's Wildcast. Thanks for tuning in. If you haven't, again, subscribe to us on the Apple Podcast app or on Google Play, or download our Wildcaster app, and all our stories and podcasts are on there. And next week, we'll have podcasts coming out again, Monday, Wednesday, Friday. I think Justin Spears will make his debut at some point. And like I said earlier, we're going to have our road trip to El Paso. We're going to have probably like a 30-minute pod of us chatting it up, me, Greg Hansen, Michael Lev. Be sure to check back, and thanks again for listening in.